Hello. Welcome to our program on careers. I'm Irene Lubin, a volunteer reader for Sun Sounds of Arizona. I would like to begin today's program with an article which appeared in the New York Times on the 4th of April. The title of this article is Tariff Storm May Upset the Job Market, and the article was written for the Times by Ben Castleman and Colby Smith. For 3 years now, the United States economy has been buffeted by rapid inflation, high interest rates, and political instability at home and abroad. And yet, it has proven surprisingly resilient, supported by the sturdy pillars of robust consumer spending, a rising stock market, and healthy balance sheets for households and for businesses alike. But now, one by one, those pillars have begun to crack under the weight of tariffs and uncertainty. The all-out global trade war that President Trump has declared on Wednesday could be enough to shatter what had arguably been the economy's final source of support, the strong job market. The strength of the consumer is coming down to the jobs market, said Sarah House, an economist at Wells Fargo, and it's increasingly perilous. The sweeping tariffs that Mr. Trump has announced recently and the duties that United States trade partners quickly imposed in return set stock market indexes around the world tumbling last week and the week before. The effects won't be limited to the financial markets either. Economists are saying that the tariffs will raise prices for consumers and businesses alike, which will then lead employers to pull back on hiring. And if the tariffs remain in place long enough, they'll have to lay off workers. If the economy is not growing as fast or isn't growing at all, you don't need as many workers, Ms. House said. Economists will get their latest glimpse of the job situation on Friday and in coming weeks when the Bureau of Labor Statistics will release March figures on hiring and unemployment. But even before the latest salvo on trade, the uncertainty surrounding the administration's policies have led many businesses to delay hiring plans and put off expansions or other investments. A survey of manufacturers released recently by the Federal Reserve Bank of Dallas showed that forecasts for capital expenditures in 6 months' time dropped sharply in March. The outlook for employment also soured as businesses turned downbeat about the overall economic backdrop. Trump, tariffs, massive uncertainty. How can you do business planning with all of this uncertainty around us and the daily changes in direction made by this current administration? One electronics manufacturing executive said in a survey response. The labor market has proven remarkably resilient in recent years, defying predictions from many forecasters that the Federal Reserve's efforts to rein in inflation would lead then to rising unemployment. That has helped support the broader economy, even as American savings have waned and their confidence has faded. Many have held on to their jobs, allowing them to keep spending up. But even before Mr. Trump took office, there were hints around that the labor market was more fragile than the low unemployment rate and steady pace of job growth suggested. Companies were not cutting jobs, but they were not adding them either. Workers had grown reluctant to change employers, and those who were around looking for different jobs were taking longer to find them. That caution has only intensified during the chaotic early months of Mr. Trump's presidency. I think there is some shakiness starting to show, said Allison Strivostavka, who is an economist at the job site Indeed. You can almost think of the labor market as a rock in the ocean getting battered and getting weathered by all the other things going on in the economy. Any pullback in hiring is likely to show up first in industries that are directly hurt by the tariffs, such as retailers that sell imported goods and manufacturers that rely on imported materials to make their products. They may already be happening. A survey of chief financial officers released recently showed that a quarter of the companies were scaling back already their hiring and their capital spending plans for 2025 because of the tariffs. But even businesses that are seemingly far removed from the trade war could be feeling the effects if higher prices lead consumers to pull back their spending. Al Woodhouse Spa at Colorado based chain of 88 luxury wellness centers. Business has grown rapidly for them in recent years as the rising stock market and strong economic growth have lifted the fortunes of affluent households that make up its customer base. But so far there is little sign of that changing, said Ben Jones, who runs Woodhouse's parent company, Radiance Holdings. But with stock prices falling and surveys showing that consumers are increasingly wary, Mr. Jones is now watching his sales figures closely for any signs that business is taking a hit there. And tariffs will further drive up already sky-high construction costs, making it much harder to expand. As a result, when Radiance's executives made hiring plans for this year, they took a cautious approach. Positions they had hoped to be adding, like a site election specialized to help identify potential new locations, were then put on hold. We openly discussed, do we really need these new positions, Mr. Jones said. In the face of this uncertainty, let's make sure that we're only hiring exactly what we will need this year. Radiance is not planning on cutting any jobs yet, but that could change if revenues start to fall behind the company's projections. We do have a budget to hit, Mr. Jones said. We obviously watch revenue very closely and need to make the hard decisions if we see we're going to start missing the budgets for the year. Layoffs have crept up in recent months, particularly among small businesses, which have less of a cushion against higher costs. But companies have generally responded to uncertainty by pausing hiring, not by cutting jobs, in part because memories of the post-pandemic labor shortages remain fresh among hiring managers. I think there is still a bit of scarring from that labor market that leaves employers really waiting to hold on to their workers, said Amy Glaser, who is a senior vice president at the staffing firm Adecco. That could change, though, if tariffs begin rising and companies' costs are hurting sales in result. Employers may initially resist layoffs in the hope that the trade war will prove to be short-lived, but if the tariffs do remain in place, job cuts are inevitable, said Noah Yosef, who is chief economist for the American Staffing Association. When we're going to start to see more of an acceleration in layoffs and this freeze within the labor market is if employers can then en masse begin to lose hope in the fact that tariffs are not going to be short-term tools designed to cure better trade details, he said. High-end potentially rising inflation further complicates the hiring picture for companies. When supply chains gummed up during the pandemic and costs soared, but businesses were then able to pass along much of those added expenses to their customers. They may be much more constrained this time around, though, which would then force them to absorb the costs themselves. I'd be more worried that consumers just say no when it comes out of corporate profits, said Donald Rissmiller, who is chief economist at Straight Gas, a research firm. That would be followed then by layoffs and cuts in capital spending and travel, he said, adding, I'm worried about that channel. After Mr. Trump's announcement on Wednesday, Mr. Rissmiller said that he expected the unemployment rate to rise up to 5% from 4.1% in February. He also raised his U.S. recession odds for this year to 45%. Most forecasters expect the March employment report to show a modest slowdown in hiring, punctuated by job losses among federal workers. But the data was collected in mid-March, an eternity ago, given subsequent developments. I never thought that a month behind would seem as ancient history, but it does seem that way now, Mr. Srivastava said. The next article that I would like to read for you today is from the Wall Street Journal, the 5th of April. The title of this article is "More of Us Bring Lunch to Work. That's Bad for the Economy." This article was written for the Journal by Ray A. Smith. Offices are full again, but restaurants are selling fewer lunches than they did in the depths of 2020. Inside the office fridge, maybe behind a don't touch post-it note, is a telling economic indicator. More employees are eating their lunches brought from home than they have in years. Millions of people now have been called back to work in offices, but that's not the massive windfall that restaurants, salad bars, and sandwich spots had hoped for after the COVID-19 pandemic decimated their midday businesses. Many workers are now finding picking up lunches too pricey for them, and more are schlepping in Tupperware and brown bags than they did a year ago. Nationwide, the number of lunches brought from restaurants and other establishments fell 3% in 2024 from the year before to $19.5 billion, fewer than were purchased even in 2020 at the height of the pandemic work-from-home era, according to consumer analytics firm Circana. Meanwhile, purchases of food from grocery and other stores that shoppers intend to eat at home or bring to work for lunch climbed 1%. Bethany Kennedy, an attorney near Buffalo, New York, says that she used to spend $500 a month going out to lunch during the week. Rising costs, including a jump in her property taxes, made her reconsider all of that, and now she limits herself to one lunch out a week when she's really craving it. She brings in pre-made meals such as Southwest salads with corn, beans, cheese, and tortilla chips, or Stouffer's three-cheese rigatoni from her local Aldi the rest of the week. She revels in saving money, but there is a downside, she says. I'm starting to get bored. The shift is a threat to the ecosystem of delis, cafes, and other office area eateries that already went through near extinction in the 2020 pandemic lockdowns, when thousands closed for good and others struggled serving takeout for months. In downtown Boston, most full-service restaurants have not resumed lunch service post-COVID, said Michael J. Nichols, president of the Downtown Boston Alliance. We're still not back at foot traffic levels that approach 2019, he said. The alliance is now on alert for how new tariffs and recession fears are going to affect visits to fast casual restaurants, he added. Restaurants and city business development groups have been stepping up their game to woo more lunchtime customers back. High Street Place Food Hall, which opened in downtown Boston in 2022, holds watch parties for events such as March Madness and the Masters to lure more workers in during the day. He has also rolled out an online ordering system so that the guests can skip the lunch rush line, said Lauren Johnson, senior marketplace manager. Greater St. Louis Incorporated, an economic development organization there, has hired buskers to play music and promoted other events to help drive more foot traffic in the downtown neighborhood. The downtown SF Park partnership in San Francisco, where office occupancy hovers around 43%, according to security badge swipe data from Castle Systems, has been promoting performances including live jazz in two downtown public spaces during lunchtime to encourage workers to grab a bite and stay for the entertainment, said Robbie Silver, the partnership's president and CEO. Post-pandemic restaurants, especially those who have relied on the 9-to-5 work crowd, are still in a very vulnerable state, he said. While he is optimistic that recent return-to-work mandates are going to boost lunch businesses, Silver said he is keeping an ear out for feedback that dining traffic might be declining. Lunchtime foot traffic to fast casual restaurants in the U.S. fell an average of 7.9% year-over-year in the first quarter, according to data from market research firm Black Box Intelligence. Traffic to fast food chains and other quick service restaurants fell an average of 4.2%. Restaurant chains had a rough year last year, with several, such as Red Lobster, the nation's largest seafood restaurant chain, Tex-Mex restaurant Tijuana Flats, and Mediterranean Eatery Rotary, declaring bankruptcy. Many workers are saying they just cannot afford the price of grabbing a quick bite out these days. Hybrid office workers spent an average of $21.06 on lunch in 2024, which was up from $16 in 2023, according to a study of 2,000 full-time U.S. workers by Owl Labs, which is a video conferencing company. In a recent LinkedIn poll, 71% of about 4,250 respondents said that they had made a resolution to bring their lunch to work more often. Yet new habits can be tough to forge. I am not trying to eat this spaghetti 3 days in a row, said Valerie Myers, a communications professional in Richmond, Virginia. She knew that if she brought in last night's leftovers, she'd give up out of boredom, so she alternates them and is not eating for lunch what she had the night before. Robert Johnson, a mechanical design engineer in Southern California, recently got assistance from his wife, who often packed for him the night before leftover pot pies, pizza, or pulled pork made by their chef's son. Still, half asleep in the early morning, though, he often forgot them in the refrigerator. My wife is like, I can't believe you missed it. Do I have to put a big note on it? He said. Putting a lunch bag by the front door has helped Marce Walter, a registered massage therapist in Edmonton, Alberta, remember to bring her lunch to work. I get halfway to work and then it's like, doggone, how many granola bars do I have at work? She said. Then there is the challenge of finding space in crammed office refrigerators and dealing with waits for the microwave. It can be a squeeze, said Danielle Nathan, who runs her employer stocks the office fridge with every beverage under the sun you can think of, as well as fruits, yogurts, cheese, and other snacks. Nathan, who lives in Manhattan and works in education and program development for a trade association, said, if I have something with a stronger smell, like roasted broccoli, I won't heat it all the way to avoid the scent blossoming throughout the office. The next article that I would like to read for you is from a recent issue of the Wall Street Journal. Your company is watching you and doing it all wrong. This article was written for the journal by Andrew Brodsky. Employers often feel as if they have to monitor workers. There are bad ways to do it and not as bad ways. When it comes to companies monitoring their employees, there is a fundamental mismatch. Companies want to do it and employers and employees generally don't like it. After all, who wants somebody looking over his shoulder all the time? So, how do companies monitor employees in a way that minimizes this resentment? Many companies believe that they have no choice but to monitor their employees, especially in an era of remote work. Bosses say they want to make certain that the workers are being as productive as possible and are not slacking off, absent in-person supervision. According to Gartner, 71% of employees are now digitally monitored in some way, up from 30% before the pandemic hit. The issue is that many of these companies are misguided. There is no substantial body of evidence saying that monitoring is better than non-monitoring at all. Research, in fact, suggests that monitoring does not do much except stress out the employees. But as long as companies feel that they have to keep an eye on the employees, there are bad ways to do it, and there are not as bad ways. These latter strategies don't make people love being watched or necessarily make them more productive, but they can help the employees feel better about the process itself, as well as about their work and the employer. So here's a look at some of the best approaches I have found in my research as well as in studies done by others. First, be transparent. Too often, companies monitor doing things such as logging website visits or even spying on employees through webcams, but don't let the employees know. That is a mistake. Employees will inevitably find out. The better approach is going to be to tell the employees that they are being monitored and, just as important, why the company is doing it. This makes monitoring seem more honest and up there and less sinister, and it becomes easier for the employees to buy in. Imagine that a consulting firm starts tracking employee activity. If it just tells the workers that it is keeping an eye out on them without any other context, the staff will likely get edgy and suspicious. But employees would likely feel a lot better if the company explains that it wants clients to feel more secure that billable hours are accurate. One study that looked at 257 university call center employees showed just how important it is for managers to properly explain monitoring and how it is being used to assess the workers. Employees who thought their manager's explanation was adequate felt significantly greater fairness and trust in their managers, and in turn, they were also more satisfied with their jobs. Make the data available. It isn't enough to tell the employees that they are being watched. The company should give them access to the data that is collected. Again, transparency is going to make workers more comfortable with surveillance and less suspicious of their employers. In a survey of 800 German respondents, researchers found that they were significantly more critical of monitoring systems in which only the employer but not the employee had access to the data. Frame it smartly. It is also important to present monitoring to the right light. Employees often feel as though companies are tracking data as a gotcha to punish them. Instead, companies should be showing workers how the collected data can help them to do their jobs better, such as tracking the impact of their work on the clients and how much time they spend in meetings versus work tasks. So, a study of 330 sales and customer service employees in a Midwestern telecommunications organization does bear this out. The more that employees thought monitoring systems were helping their growth, the more satisfaction and commitment they felt. But companies should not take transparency to the extreme here. Consider a study of 108 students correcting entries in a database. In cases where students were frequently reminded that they were being monitored, they reported feeling less in control of their own work. And finally, give employees a choice. Employees may also respond badly in attitude and performance as well if they have less control over this process. In one experiment, some people doing a data entry and proofing task were able to turn off monitoring altogether. Their accuracy improved by 22% compared to those who had no control over the monitoring. Employers might worry that workers would abuse that power to temporarily turn off monitoring, and yet only 4 participants actually did so. Although these researchers did not study this specifically, those findings align with a substantial body of research on impression management, which has shown that people generally realize that being seen putting forth effort into their work is going to make them look good, and hiding their efforts too often may be received negatively. Andrew Brodsky, who wrote the article that I just have read for you, is an assistant professor of management at the University of Texas in Austin, and he is the author of a coming soon book, Ping, The Secrets of Successful Virtual Communication. Probably this would be good for both employers and employees. This does bring us to the end of the time that we have for our program on careers for today. I hope that you've enjoyed listening in and will enjoy the rest of your day and our beautiful spring weather. Thank you for listening to me. I'm Irene Lubin, and I'm a volunteer reader. You're listening to Sun Sounds of Arizona.